Yesterday on the program, we talked with Luis Alberto Urrea, author of Into the Beautiful North, which is this year's book choice for the Atlanta History Center and Atlanta Fulton County Library's Big Read program. Today, we turn the tables on Urrea and ask him to tell us about three of his favorite books. It's an installment of Page Turners, our occasional series. WABE's Kate Sweeney asked him about his go-to reads, which range from nature writing to magical realism to nail-biting horror.
The first book you've chosen is a work of nonfiction. Tell me about Pilgrim at Tinker Creek.
Well, Annie Dillard decided to pull a Thoreau, and go to Walden Pond, essentially. And she went to this place called Tinker Creek, and she had a cabin there in the woods. And she, I think, put on her boxing gloves and had it out with solitude and nature and God and writing and herself. And, you know, it may seem like a quiet voice, but it's quite savage. There's a lot of really savage stuff in it. The beginning of the book is her looking at herself naked in the mirror, and she thinks she's somehow picked up paintings of roses all over her body, and it's actually bloody cat footprints from the cat having slaughtered something. So she's setting this really weird, stunning agenda of life and death and destruction and creation and, you know, maybe the glory of spirit, but also the consuming fire of this kind of life. It really helped pull me into the world of trusting that I could write nonfiction.
How's that? I started out writing.
I didn't feel like I had the authority, maybe, to write essays about stuff. And then suddenly I thought, oh, my God, she's taken the authority of herself. It was art as well, you know?
Your second choice is a novel, Bless Me Ultima, by a writer named Rudolfo Anaya that you said is kind of like the To Kill a Mockingbird of certain Hispanic communities.
Yeah.
Why did you make that comparison?
You could call it the Tequila Mockingbird. Yuck,
hey.
Yuck. Thank you very much. See what I did there? That was really sharp. But, you know, it's about a seven-year-old boy around World War II in a small town in a time of racial tension. It just happens to be a Hispanic town in New Mexico. And there's a murder mystery. At the same time, there's an old healer woman, what we call a curandera, named Ultima. Perhaps obvious, perhaps not, but it means the last. So she's the last of her people, really. And she may be the last healer woman. And she comes into this boy's life. So at the same time that all of this sort of societal drama is going on and trying to grow up and transformation and all this, Ultima comes into their lives and brings in a whole new kind of spiritual perspective and philosophical perspective. So Bless Me Ultima is a really, to me and to people who love and, you know, reread this book over and over, a really touching phrase. Please bless me, last of your kind. Like, it's very well done. So, you know, in our community, it's very important. It's a cultural touchstone, certainly in the Southwest.
I'm wondering if you would talk a little bit about that and where that comes from and what draws you to that role.
So I was raised, you know, my dad was pretty absent. And in the Tijuana phase of my life, my parents had to go to San Diego to work. So I was left in the clutches of my grandmother, my two aunts. And then when we came to San Diego, I unfortunately was very, very ill. We only moved because I was dying of many poverty diseases, including tuberculosis. And my parents didn't know how to care for me. And one of the cannery families took me in during the day. And they began ministering to me, aside from my antibiotics and stuff, all this strange Mexican curandera herbalism and teas and smokes and incenses, and they helped raise me. And it was all women. And, you know, that's just been my experience of powerful women that I learned from. My teachers were women. God has seen fit to always send a powerful woman figure to me. It's always happened. So it was really vivid to me that that's really central to our culture when our culture is working.
You have a passage from Bless Me Ultima. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's short, but I think it'll give you a sense of the flavor. It's just the very opening. Es Bless Mi Ultima by Rudolfo Anaya. Ultima came to stay with us the summer I was almost 7. When she came, the beauty of the llano unfolded before my eyes, and the gurgling waters of the river sang in the hum of the turning earth. The magical time of childhood stood still, and the pulse of the living earth pressed its mystery into my living blood. She took my hand, and the silent magic power she possessed made beauty from the raw sun-baked llano, the green river valley, and the blue bowl which was the white sun's home. My bare feet felt the throbbing earth, and my body trembled with excitement. Time stood still, and it shared with me all that had been and all that was to come.
So there's just also some gorgeous language.
I think it's a myth. It's a legend. It's a gift because it allows you into a world that you may not know.
Your third book is about a quest, and this is a theme we see again and again in your own work, ordinary people destined to be part of a much larger story.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean...
Maybe not what you were thinking when you said this is going to be my choice.
No, you know, I like to read for fun, and the biggest fun I had in a long time was when I discovered Stephen King. My head blew up, and when I read The Stand... I thought, holy cow, this is like Mishner with monsters. This rules. And I was hooked. I'm still hooked. I love that book.
How old were you and where were you in life when you first read The Stand?
Oh, my. College, maybe? I wanted to be a writer more than anything. And the version, the original version of The Stand had been cut by 500 pages.
Right.
So the cut they had made was brilliant. In that the original version of The Stand just began with a bunch of guys sitting around a Texas gas station, you know, shooting the breeze, and a car rolls in slowly and crashes into a gas pump. And the story is off. I thought that was the most brilliant opening, and I read a lot that I had read in a long time. I was completely hooked, completely intrigued. And then the later versions, restored, had all kinds of sci-fi stuff about, you know, science centers, and I was really sad.
It didn't start with the action.
Well, yeah, I guess so, right? I couldn't believe a book that big got going with such a bang and never relented. And just the depth of the story and the kind of offhand spirituality, which is how I needed to approach spirituality at that moment, was really moving.
So for folks who have not read this 1,000-page-plus... home of a book by Stephen King. What is the plot?
Come on, everybody's read it.
I have not read it.
Oh.
No, I haven't.
It's a parable. It's essentially an ancient Christian parable, believe it or not, about the end of the world, the end times. So rather than, you know, what we hear about as a rapture in our churches, Stephen King posits, because he's Stephen King, a hideous outbreak of the flu that kills almost everybody on the planet. And this small remnant of survivors starts to gather. And they're driven by dreams about an old black woman, Mother Abigail. But they also have this terrible dream about a man with no face. And being Stephen King, there is a man who may or may not have a face, who's known as the Walking Dude. And it becomes this parable of, you know, survivors, some hooking up with wickedness and some hooking up with Mother Abigail, and how this morality play is played out. And, you know, the older and more sophisticated you get, you think, okay, kind of formulaic, but, you know, the essential crisis is so fascinating, and the story is just so completely consuming that it kind of hypnotized me as a reader.
You have a great story about The Stand that involves your son.
Yeah, our son Eric was about 14, I think. And it's our habit to go on epic road trips. And the kid, you know, was interested in reading, but he was a kid. He was like comic books. And he had gotten into R.L. Stein, which was cool. So I said to him, "You want to read something really scary?" "Yeah, Dad." And I pulled out The Stand, my old Doubleday hardcover, you know, and he looked with dismay at the size of it. And I said, "Just try it. See what you think." And he would ride in the far back, the way back in our van. And we started our trip. And, you know, he never came out of his seat the whole way across country. He consumed that book with obsessiveness. And then he could not believe that we could, you know, go to Boulder. We could be in the Rockies where they were. We could go up the road they went up. Are you kidding me? And he got done with the book, and he was bereft. I thought, holy cow, my kid is upset that a book ended. You know, thank God. And he came to me and he said, dude, I'm bummed, man. The book is done. I said, you're bummed, huh? And he said, yeah, I don't want it to end. And I said, well, guess what? Go back to page one. And he looked at me and he said, what? I said, yeah. Read it over. And he said, you can do that? And I said, yeah, that's why you get a book. You can do it as many times as you want. So the second half of the summer, he went back and he read it over again.
Thank you so much for joining us on Page Turners, Luis Alberto Urrea.
Yeah, this is fun.